So the topic which I wanted to talk about is the subject of avodim, of slaves, because that's a topic in the parasha, so the subject of slaves, right? So avodim. So as a summary, there are different work relationships, there are different employment relationships in halacha, as we know. So there's the concept of the eved kanani, which is a Canaanite slave. Then you have the subject of the Eved Ivri, which is the Jewish slave. So, you know, I don't want to use the word slave, it's more the indentured servant. The Eved Ivri is the Jewish servant. And then you have also like an employee, a regular employee relationship as well. So the many halachas are pertaining to all of them. And specifically when it comes to the Eved Kanani, so an Eved Kanani, a Canaanite slave or servant, is forever, but an Eved Ivri is temporary. It's a six-year service, and if the Jubilee year occurs within that six-year period, so that even goes free then as well. And then a regular employee relationship is a contract between two people. But the parasha speaks about the Eved Ivri, and if you take a look, if you have a Chumash, it's chapter 25, verse 39, and the Pasuk has two rules with regard to the Eved Ivri. In terms of the allowance of the odin, of the master, to, in terms of the work and the type of thing he's allowed to subject him to. So, verse 25, 39. So the pasuk says, "Ki yomuch achicha imach, if your brother should waxen poor with you, becomes poor and impoverished, v'nimkalach." And is sold to you, because that's one of the reasons, that's one of the allowances to become an Eved Ivri. If a person becomes so poor, he can't look after himself, he's allowed to sell himself as an Eved Ivri. The rule is, on the Odin, on the master, Pasuk says, Lo sa'avud bo avodas aved. He shall not make him do the work of an Eved. He shall not do the work of an Eved. What does that mean? Rashi explains that it means, avodas shel ganai, some type of service of disgrace, a demeaning type of work. They look like an Eved, and looks like a regular, perhaps non-Jewish Eved, a regular slave. He shouldn't carry his towel after him to the bathhouse. Like you're walking to the bathhouse, and you've got your Eved behind you carrying your bath, the towel. And also not to put your shoes on or to take your shoes off. You can't treat him in a demeaning way. He has to be treated with tremendous respect and can't do demeaning work. So that's the first expression. Avodas Eved is the work of an Eved, of a slave. He can't do that. And next pasuk says, Kisachi Ketoshav Yihyeh Imach, because you have to be like a laborer, like a regular laborer or a resident with you until if the oval year comes and he goes free. And then verse 43, further down, it says, Avadato. Verse 43, sorry. Also, you shouldn't treat him. Don't drive him with parach, with hard work. That's the expression used by Mitzrayim, by the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Don't drive him. Don't subjugate him through hard labor. Parach, hard labor, which Rashi says on that means melacha shalilatzarach kedei lanoso. Busy work which is not necessary, just to keep him busy and to cause him to be afflicted. Al tomalo, don't say to him, Hachem li asakos hazav, warm for me this cup of tea, warm for me this water, when you don't really need it. V'hu ainat tsar, you don't need it. You're asking him to do work which you don't need. So that's considered avodas parach, this hard, like that's what parach did to the Jewish people. Made them work, do things, build the cities of Pisum and Ramses, which didn't have any purpose, just in order to make them work for the sake of working. You can't do this to the Eved. Ador tachas agefen ad sha'avot. Hey, go over to the tree over there. Go hoe underneath the tree until I get back. Keep yourself busy until I get back. Shematomar ein makib bedover, lest you say, well, no one's going to recognize what I'm doing. Who knows what my intention is? Maybe I really have, you know, I want him to do something worthwhile. No one knows what I'm thinking. But this is in your heart. This is given over to your heart for you to decide yourself. As the Pasuk says at the end, the Pasuk ends by saying, fear Hashem. Because this is between you and Hashem, and between you and the Eved. But ultimately, no one's going to you know, arraign you for this. No one's going to know what you're doing, but you know what you're doing and you know what you're thinking, and Hashem knows what you're thinking. So therefore, have fear of Hashem and make sure you don't violate this rule as well. So you've got these two rules over here about the Eved Ivri. Number one, he can't do Avodas Eved. He can't do the work of a slave, which is considered demeaning work, demeaning kinds of activities. And also Avodas Perach, which is unnecessary work. Unnecessary work, busy work, unnecessary work, demeaning work, and unnecessary work. So that's the rule of the Eved Ivri. Now, technically speaking, this doesn't apply to the Eved Kanani, right? The Eved Kanani, you're allowed to do these things with an Eved Kanani, with a non-Jewish slave. However, the Rambam says that you shouldn't do that. You have to act with piety because that's the way of the Jewish way. So even though legally, technically, you're allowed to do this type of work with the Eved Kanani can do this kind of work for you, but you shouldn't do that on an ethical level. So the Rambam says, although this is the law with regard to the Eved Kanani, the non-Jewish slave, but the attribute of piety and the way of wisdom is for a person to be merciful and to pursue justice, not to make his slaves, any kind of slaves, carry a heavy yoke nor cause them distress. He should allow them to partake of all of the food and drink that he serves. Similarly, we should not embarrass a slave by our deeds or with words, for the Torah prescribed that they perform service, not that they be humiliated. Nor should one shout or vent anger upon them extensively. Instead, one should speak to them gently and listen to their claims. So this is the proper way. This is the moral, ethical way to treat an Eved. It's logical. Cruelty and arrogance, he says, are found only among idol worshippers. By contrast, the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, our patriarchs, the Jews whom the Holy One, blessed be He, granted the goodness of the Torah and commanded to observe righteous statutes and judgments, are merciful to all. That's the trait of the Yidden, right? The Jewish people are considered by Shonim, Rachmonim, Gomli Chason, that's the three traits that the Jews are known for. By Shon, they have shame, they are Gomli Chason, they bestow kindness, and they're also Rachmonim as well, merciful. That's our trait. So therefore, again, it's an important idea that technically speaking, there's nothing illegal, halachically illegal, to subject the non-Jewish slave to more demeaning kinds of work or busy work. Legally, it's not illegal to do that. But morally and ethically, it's not the right thing to do. But, right, but what you do see, though, is that with the Eved Ivri, right, it's not only is it unethical with a Jewish servant, not only is it unethical to treat him in a demeaning way and also to put him to busy work, but it's also illegal. It's unethical and illegal because that's what the Pasuk says. Because with regard to the Jewish Eved, right, the Pasuk says explicitly, don't subject him to Avodas Perach, which is busy work, and Avodas Eved, which is demeaning work. So it's illegal for the Eved Ivri, but unethical for the Eved Kanani, for the non-Jewish slave. So that's the difference, though. The question is, what's the difference? Like, why is it illegal with regard to the Eved Ivri, the Jewish slave, and unethical for the Eved Kanani? That's the question. So the answer really is, the Rambam says it himself, the Rambam says earlier at the beginning of the laws of Avodim, so the Rambam says, so these rules of demeaning work and busy work only applicable to the Eved Ivri, the Medavamor, and when do we say this, but Eved Ivri, Mipnei, the reason is, Shenafsho Shefela B'Mechir, because he has a low self-concept. Because he had to sell himself. Either he sold himself, he had to sell himself because he was poor, or he had to be sold because he stole. But his nefesh is shefela, his spirit is low, because he had to sell himself. Avol Yisrael, now he's contrasting this with a Jew as well, with regard to this contrast also applies to an employee as well. Not that you can subject the employee to demeaning work. Again, morally, ethically, it's wrong to do that as well. The Rambam earlier was speaking about an Eved Kanani, but he's even referring here to a regular employee with regard to busy work, right? With busy work or demeaning work, technically speaking, you're allowed to. A Yisrael Shlanimka, but to a Jew who sold himself, with regard to a Jew who didn't sell himself, he was agreed to go into this relationship of an employment. You're allowed to treat him technically, you're allowed to treat him in a little more of a demeaning and busy work kind of way. Because he's only doing this work of his own volition. He chose to go into this work relationship. But in Eved Ivri, he was stuck. He was stuck. It's true, he stole, perhaps. He stole, but that was, you know, that was there. But now he's forced to be in this situation. But suddenly, if he had to sell himself because he was poor, he's forced to be in this situation. And the Rambam says, his nefesh is shefela. He has like a low sense of self. He feels like a nobody. He feels like a nobody. He's not willfully, volitionally putting himself into this work relationship. He feels like a low person. And because of that feeling of lowliness and feeling demeaned because of the position he's in, so therefore the other, the master, is not allowed to add fuel to the fire and make him feel even more demeaned and more lowly in that situation, because he's already in that situation. He's already feeling psychologically, emotionally lowly. And therefore, the rule is, the law is, right? The halacha is, it's a deraisa. It's a biblical requirement. You have to treat this Eved Ivri with the greatest level of respect and never in any way whatsoever cause him to feel downtrodden even more, because he's already feeling downtrodden because he was in that situation. It's an amazing lesson. It's an amazing idea. But it really goes to and speaks to the whole idea of really, I mean, it's an ongoing daily, you know, challenge of our relationships with everyone to be able to identify who's feeling downtrodden, who's feeling a little bit that their self-esteem is damaged, they're not feeling so uplifted, and to do everything we can to be able to make sure that we are sensitive to that and try to uplift the spirits of everyone around us. And there are so many examples of this. So, for example, there's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma, Tractate Yuma, and talks about the service of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur, right? The service of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says that Masru l'Zekeinim, that the Kohen Gadol in his preparation for the Avoda, for the service of Yom Kippur, the sages would hand over to him, would put like assign to him, Ziknei Bezdin, elders of the Bezdin, the Koran Lefana Beseda Yom, they would read to him the order of the day and train him and teach him to make sure he knows the halachas of the order of the day for the Yom Kippur service and his preparation beforehand. And they would say to him, Ishi Kohen Gadol, my master, Mr. Kohen Gadol, Kara Ata Beficha, you read it also. Read through the laws, read through the parsha to make sure you're familiar with all the laws of the Yom Kippur service. Shema Shichachta, because maybe you will have forgotten them. It's been a whole year since you did it last year. Maybe you forgot it. Oshema Lo Lamatata, or maybe you never learned it in the first place. Maybe you never learned it in the first place. You have to make sure, you know, but you have to bone up on the laws of Yom Kippur before you do it. Maybe you'll never learned it. So right away, the Gemara asks on this and says, what do you mean? I understand Bishlam Shema Shokach. I understand that maybe he forgot the halachas. It's been a whole year since he learned the halachas. L'chaye, I understand that. El Shema Lo Lomad, that lest he never learned it in the first place. How can that be the case? Mimuk Minan Ki Hai Gavna. Would we ever set up a Kohen Gadol like that who never learned in the first place? It goes against the following Braisa. For Hatanya, we learned in the Braisa. For HaKohen, HaGadol Me'achov, the Pasuk says, the Kohen HaGadol Me'achov, who's greater than his other, who's greater than the brothers, other Kohanim, that is, Shiei Gadol Me'achov. He has to be greater than the other Kohanim of his group. Bekoach, in strength, benoy, in beauty, bechokhmah, in wisdom, uboshan, also in wealth as well. So without going into all the details of those different characteristics, but one thing is clear, he has to be a chokhm. He has to know the halachas. He has to be wiser than the other kohanim in chokhmah as well. So how can you say that he's never learned the halachas? The answer is, says the Gemara, Amr of Yosef, Rav Yosef answered, look, kash is not a difficulty, because kamba mikdash rishon, because here it's referring to Mikdash Rishon, the first base of Mikdash. Meaning, this Bryce, which you're quoting over here, that he has to be wiser than all his brothers, is referring to Mikdash Rishon, the first base of Mikdash. And that was the case. That's really the halacha, the first base of Mikdash. They had to be smarter than the other ones, have more chokhmah, certainly know the halachas. But the Mishnah is talking about Mikdash Sheni, talking about the second base of Mikdash, which I know it's a well-known thing, the second base of Mikdash. The level of integrity and the righteousness, the Kohanim Gadolim, the Kohanim in general, were lower in the second base of Mikdash. They bought their way into the position of the priesthood of being the Kohen Gadol. And it was all, the Gemara says earlier, that there were, in the times of the second base of Mikdash, because of their lack of righteousness, The Kohanim Gedolim kept dying over the generations. There were over 300 Kohanim Gedolim in the second Beis Hamikdash period.
Wow.
But the point is that the second Beis Hamikdash, they weren't as righteous. And therefore, it was definitely the case that there was Kohanim Gedolim who didn't know the halachas. Hence, the Mishnah says that the elders have to go over the halachas with him and say and make sure that he's learned the halachas beforehand. And then the Gemara quotes a story over here. For example, Ravasi says, Tarkava de dinare. There was a certain amount of dinar of money. Aili le Marta Basbaitas. There was a woman called by the name of Marta Basbaitas who gave to Yanai, the king, a certain amount of money so that her son, Yehoshua ben Gamla, shall become the Kohen Gadol. She bribed him that he should become the Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua ben Gamla was the Kohen Gadol, but he was bribed in. He bought his way in. She bribed her, the king, that he should become the Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua ben Gamla, fine. So that's the story of Yehoshua ben Gamla. The problem is, right, Yehoshua ben Gamla, does anyone know, is that a familiar name to anyone, Yehoshua ben Gamla? Yeah. So the Gemara says in Bava Basra, Yehoshua ben Gamla, he was so well known for the fact that he reinstated and reinstituted the whole educational system in the land of Israel. He's accredited for basically ensuring the endurity, the endurance of Torah and Klal Yisrael by establishing yeshivas and schools and guaranteeing the continuity of Jewish education in Eretz Yisrael. He was obviously accredited as being a very, very great man. So how do you reconcile that with this over here, that Yehoshua ben Gamla was one of those examples of Kohanim Gedolim who weren't so righteous and didn't know so much and was brought into the position? Yeah, but he was the great one, the great Yehoshua ben Gamla, who restored Torah to the Jewish people in his generation. So what's the understanding? So the Mefarshim will talk about this. They all ask this question. They wonder what's going on. So one of the answers is, this is brought from the Sfas Emes. So he says that he quotes over here, the Ritva, one of the Rishonim says that perhaps this follows, Once Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla received the position, was appointed to become the Kohen Gadol, once he was raised to the position, what happened? Nis'ala l'shvach. He became elevated for his own praise. Meaning to say that because he was put into that position, he rose to the occasion. Mm-hmm. He rose to the occasion. Once he was elevated, he became elevated. And then the Sfas Emes writes over here, he says, regarding the Kohanim and the Kohen Gadol, the Pasuk says, the HaKohen HaGadol Me'achov, that the Kohen Gadol is great from his brothers, which he explains, the Gamzin Nichl B'mayma HaCherim Gadleihu, the other Kohanim elevate him. The Pasuk implies the other Kohanim elevate him. Mashal, Mishal Echov, that elevation comes from the brothers. The Kulam Nastu Kochem V'Tefilasim Olam, because all of them put their energy and their tefillah into the Kohen Gadol to help him to become to rise to that position and to become great in that position. V'Achziru L'Mutav, and then brought him back to the good. Mm. And that's why. And so this is the power. That's why he was one of those examples of somebody who was elevated, who became elevated because he was elevated. He became elevated because he was elevated, right? And it's the same idea. When we elevate a person, they become elevated. When you're elevated, they become elevated. We become elevated. And the importance of encouraging other people and pointing out their greatness and helping them to see their potential is the key to their success. There's an amazing thing over here. There was a thing called the Pygmalion effect. Anyone ever heard the Pygmalion effect? Mm-hmm. So here we go, the Pygmalion effect. 1968, psychologist Robert Rosenthal and the school principal, Lenore Jacobson, they devised this clever little experiment in the schools where to measure the effect the teachers' expectations had on their students' performances. So they gave teachers in the school the names of a certain number of students in each of their classes who had performed well on an intelligence pretest before the school year began. And the teachers were told that these students would blossom academically in the coming year because they did so well. But what the teachers were not told was that the pretest was a farce. Mm. And the students who were supposedly primed to exhibit intellectual growth had actually been chosen at random. However, when all of the students were tested later on in the school year, Rosenthal and Jacobson found that those students whom the teachers had been told would excel and get smarter actually scored higher and showed greater improvement than their peers. How could this be the case if these students had truly been chosen at random? What Rosenthal and Jacobson discovered is that it wasn't any inherent aptitude that predicted academic success. It was their teachers' belief in them that accounted for the growth of these students. Because they believed that these students could and would succeed, the teachers often unknowingly gave more attention to those students and engaged with them differently than they did with the kids whom they didn't have any special expectations. Mm. And this wasn't necessary. And they weren't doing this, very interesting, they weren't doing this overtly because they didn't know, right? They were told not to let on because the teachers thought these kids really did do better. So the teachers certainly were not overtly saying how great they were. And it's a very interesting point because when you try to bring out people's greatness and try to encourage people and to identify their potential, sometimes it can backfire if you overly stress, oh, how great you are, you'll do so well, you're such a great student, you're such a good athlete. And then it raises their expectations, and then they feel like they feel frustrated, and they get anxiety that they're disappointing their teachers and their parents. So therefore, there's a cleverness, there's a subtlety, there's a cleverness in how to relate to the potential and to build a person up more covertly than overtly. And that's what happened with the teachers. It's how you treat them. How they did it, I don't exactly know, but that's how they treated them was the key to their success. And it's the same concept that if we relate to people, relate to somebody in a way that they are chashuv, that they are important, that they're very special, then naturally, psychologically, they'll rise to the occasion. And that, we're coming to Shavuos, right? Next week, 10 days from now, Shavuos. What are the first words that the Jewish people hear from Hashem before the mitzvahs are even given? Before the commandments are even given, what are the famous first words? We have to remember this pasuk as well. We've got 24/7, right? We've got a few of them, but I only remember the 24/7 one. Here's another one. It's 19:6. That's an easy number to remember. 19:6. I don't know how I'm going to remember that. Okay, but in Shemos 19:6, right? It says, Talmid my name. You are a mamlechas kohanim v'am segula. You're a nation of priests and a treasured nation. These are the words before the Aseres HaDibros. This is the preamble to Torah, the preamble to responsibility of the mitzvahs is knowing how chashuv we are and knowing how important we are, knowing how special we are. It reminds me a little bit of I've told you this story a few times, my Rosh Hashiva, blessed memory. So the student who was in the base medrash, who was behaving in a way which the Rashi wasn't too happy with. He called him over, and he said, he gave him a little bit of a musa, of a rebuke. And then the bacha said back to him, he said, I'm just human, I'm only human. So the Rosh Hashiva looked at him with very, very piercing eyes, and he says, you say that as though that's your excuse, saying that I'm just human, that's your excuse. Being human is your asset. Being human is your gadlus. Being human is the greatness of who you are. It's not an excuse. It's your potential. It's your power. That's the distinction of being human versus an animal. Don't use it as an excuse to go down to being an animal. Use it as an excuse, as an inspiration to understand the potential you have and elevate yourself higher based upon that. So that's the idea. So that's, again, going back to the Eved Ivri. The Eved Ivri has to be, that's legal. It's legally required, not just morally and ethically required. Legally, here is an individual who's feeling downtrodden, who's feeling lowly, is feeling his self-esteem is being injured, and because he's in this situation, the Adon, the person who's employing him, has to lift him up. He has to lift him up. He has a legal halachic obligation to lift him up. And then, other examples of this, just thinking about examples like this, we say in the morning, right? Every morning, Modani lefanecha melechai v'kaya. I give thanks to you. And what are the last two words? Rabo emunasecha. Rabo emunasecha. So many people mistranslate that or misunderstand it to mean the great is the faith in you. Great is our faith in you, Rabbi Menasecha. It's the opposite. It's great is your faith in us. Mm-hmm. That's how we start our day. We start our day knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us with tremendous expectation because we are great. We have a neshama inside of ourselves. We're an Adam. We have a neshama. Beyond that, we have a neshama too. Hashem believes in us. He believes in us. I saw in this book, a great book, highly recommend this book. It's a very easy book to read and a very nice book, Growth Through Torah on the Parsha. These are just little snippets of really inspirational things on the Parsha. So I saw over here, he quoted from the Baal Shem Tov over here, you know, why is it, one of the reasons that Hashem took Avraham Avinu out to the night sky to look at the stars, and said, these stars over here is an example of what the Jewish people are going to look like, are going to be. So the stars, the Baal Shem Tov said, what's the characteristic of stars? Stars look tiny, right? They look like tiny little specks in the sky. What's their true size?
Enormous.
See, so the Baal Shem Tov explained that the descendants of Avraham are like stars. We see the stars from a great distance. They appear to be mere tiny specks in the sky. But in reality, in the heaven, they are gigantic. So too in this world, many people look very small externally, but in reality, they have tremendous greatness. And that's how we have to look at other people. We have to see that everyone is a star, that everyone has a tremendous, humongous, gigantic identity. The Ibn Ezra says that the reason why Moshe was raised initially in the court of Paro, in Paro's palace, specifically, why did the Hashgacha, the divine providence, have it that Moshe Rabbeinu was raised in the palace of Paro? The answer is to ready himself for leadership, in order to inculcate into him the sense of royalty, a sense of royalty. That's what we need. We need to have a sense of royalty within ourselves in order to be successful. You know, I come from England, so I'm privy to the royal society over there. So okay, but you know, even if we don't have those experiences, it doesn't stop us from developing them for ourselves, and certainly helping each other to try to, you know, to build each other up and help each other's self-esteem and to encourage them like the Eved Ivrei. When Rav Simcha Zisal of Kelm would wake up his young children in the morning, he would gently say to them, children, you're sleeping away when you have a kingdom to rule. The Almighty gave man rulership over the entire creation. You have a kingdom to rule. You're kings, you're malachim, you're bnei malachim, you're kings and queens and princes and princesses. And this is the key. The key to success is knowing how chashuv. Now, it's interesting. I was thinking because on Sunday, we were talking about humility in the Talmud Devorah, like the epitome of humility, of just knowing all we are just a conduit for the light of Hashem. And Malchus is the Sefirah, which we're doing on Sunday. And the trait and the characteristic of Malchus is that less le megarmei klum, there's nothing to it whatsoever. It has no, and we're supposed to resemble that trait of not having any ego, no self-centeredness, but that still goes together with this, because our greatness, or the greatness is being humble, the greatness is recognizing that we are just a conduit for the Hashem's light. But that's chashuv, that's so special, that is so elevating, but that's the nature, that's who we are. So we have a noble, so it comes down to these practical ways which we're supposed to treat each other with dignity, with respect, and lift people up, and to be sensitive. I think it also requires sensitivity to recognize when people are in situations when they are, you know, they are unfortunate, they are in difficult situations. I'm preparing for this, one of the webinars which I'm preparing for, not the Holy Hackers is one of them, that's on June 18th. Another one which I'm preparing for is called Dignity Behind Bars. Mm. And it's really all about the subject of incarceration and the effect of it. It's interesting because in halacha, there's no penalty, there's no punishment of incarceration in halacha, right? It's not a method of punishment, obviously, in the non-Jewish world there is. But it's, you know, the question is, how does halacha look at it? How does Judaism look at incarceration? And I think we can recognize the potential damage and injury, potential eternal damage and injury on a person's self-esteem and self-concept is enormous. And to be able to maintain dignity, I mean, Obviously, the webinar is going to get into these questions about who does deserve dignity. Does even the most hardened, most cruel criminal, most heinous criminal deserve dignity as well? So say, wait for that seminar when we do it. So when I was preparing for it, so I came across this individual. His name is Chris Wilson. I don't know how well known he is. Chris Wilson, the Chris Wilson Foundation. He was in jail for 16 years for manslaughter, and he was put in when he was 17 years old. But he had this tremendous determination to make his life worthwhile. And eventually, after 16 years, the judge allowed him to leave on the condition that he fulfill his plan. He, once in a while, you find this judge who saw the potential. She saw the potential in this individual, and she saw his greatness, his latent greatness, and gave him parole. He left, and now he's tremendously successful, doing tremendous work for in Baltimore specifically. But it's you find these examples when people see the greatness, see potential. We have to really model that for everyone to see the potential and to not allow people who are in unfortunate situations to become more deeper in their feeling of sense of loss of self and loss of identity. That's what we learn from the Evad Ivri. The Evad Ivri, you have to treat him with the utmost, more so than the other ones, than the other Avadim. So let us, let that be a little bit of a chizuk for us to, lift others up, lift ourselves up. Self-esteem is the most important ingredient for success.